Okay, so last week, 2 weeks ago actually, we didn't have a shiur last week because of the Yom HaTzmut program, but 2 weeks ago we spoke about the mitzvah of Pru Revu, of bringing children into this world. I felt that was an appropriate place to start regarding the life cycle events, you know, halachos and minhagim. So I wanted to talk a little bit about prenatal davening and testing. It's something that that does come up, and shilas do come up. And obviously, again, as with all of these shiurim, you know, these are complex topics, and you know, each of the points can be probably a shiur in and of itself. But just to at least familiarize ourselves a little bit with the issues and what's involved. We're learning brachos in yeshiva this year, and there's a fascinating mishnah and gemara in brachos, and some of you might be familiar with it, but it's really just a fascinating discussion. And this really relates to davening. About you know, prenatal davening in specific for a particular gender. Obviously, davening just in general for the health of the child is and of the mother is of utmost importance throughout the pregnancy. Of course, you know, we always throughout a person's life always we should be davening for things, you know, situations in which we find ourselves, and certainly in the case of pregnancy where we know there are complications and people sometimes you know, sometimes have challenges. So it's important to, you know, from day one, or even before day one, to just be constantly davening that everything should go well, everybody should be healthy, and that's the most important. But the Mishnah tells us in the ninth parak of Brachos, the last parak of Brachos, v'hatzoek l'sha'avar, if a person davens about something that happened already, happened in the past, harezu tefila shav, the Mishnah says it's a tefila in vain, right? It's a prayer in vain. It doesn't accomplish anything. You know, the event already happened, so it's too late to daven for something that already happened. Sounds obvious. But the Mishnah brings two interesting examples, things that we might not be so obvious to us. Haisa ishto me'uberes. A person's wife is expecting. Ve'omer yihiratzon she'teled ishti zachar. And he davens. I hope that my wife has a boy. Right? I stopped davening for that. Right? I hope my wife has a boy. I just davened that it should be a healthy child. Right? I hope my wife has a boy. Harezu tefila shav. The Mishnah says it's a tefila in vain. Why? Why is it a tefila in vain? Because the gender is already determined. Right? The gender is already determined. So if your wife is pregnant and you're davening, it should be a zachar. You could daven, you know, from today until tomorrow. But it's not gonna help anything. The gender is already determined. It's like davening for a past event. Similarly, the Mishnah says, if you have another situation, and I'm sure this has happened to everybody at least once, where you're turning onto your block and you see lights, flashing lights, or you hear sirens, and you think to yourself, I hope that that's not my house. Right? I hope that that's not my house. So if you hope it's not your house, that's one thing. But if the Mishnah says, if you daven, I'm davening, yihiratzo, that's not my house, says the Mishnah, because either it is or it isn't at that point. Whatever's happening is happening. So it's happening in someone's house. So if I daven now that I hope that this is not in my house, it's too late. If it is your house, it's too late. And if it's not your house, it's also too late. Everything is too late. It already happened. Whatever's happening is happening. So you can't daven on a past event. So that's the yesod of the Mishnah. So the fascinating Gemara here, the Gemara asks, in source number 2, which is the Gemara just a couple of blot later, after the Mishnah, so quotes the first line of the Mishnah, and then towards the end of that first line there, the Gemara asks, V'lo mahane rachame? You mean to tell me that tefillah, davening, doesn't work? I mean, that's the staple of our faith, right? This is the basis of our whole Yiddishkeit is davening. Masiv Rav Yosef, and the Gemara brings a proof that davening should work, even after the woman's expecting. From where? From Leah. Because what does the Torah say? Masi Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef asks the question based on the following pasuk: Ve'achar yaldabas. The Torah says that after Leah had 6 sons, then she had a daughter. Vatikra es shema Dina. She called her Dina. She named her Dina. Okay. My ve'achar. Excuse me.
There's still hope, Rabbi.
There's still hope. There's still hope. Even after 6 sons, there's still hope. Okay. My ve'achar. So what does the pasuk mean? Ve'achar, right? Ve'achar yoldabas. After she had a daughter. What do you mean after? Amarav la'achar shedana Leah din be'atzma ve'amra. Leah made a calculation. She made a calculation. Shnei masar shivatim asidin latzeis mi'akov. We know, everybody knows through Nevuah Ruach HaKodesh that there are going to be 12 Shvatim that come out of Yaakov Avinu. Shisha Yatsu Mimeni. So Leah's doing the math and she says, I already have 6. Right? Because she already had 6 boys. The Arba Min HaShvachos and the maidservants, Bila and Zilpa, already have 4 between the two of them. Hare Asara, that's 10. That only leaves 2. Im Ze Zachar, she realized she was pregnant. And she says, if I'm pregnant now with a male child, lo tehe achosi Rachel ka'achas ha-shvachos, my sister Rachel is going to be worse off than the shvachos, than the maidservants. Bila and Zilpa each have two sons. If I now have a 7th son, then my sister Rachel is only going to have 1 son. She's not even going to be on the same level as the maidservants. What happened? Miyad nehevcha lebas, the Gemara says. It was a male. It was a male fetus. And immediately, because of her tefilos, it changed to become a female. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vatikra es Shema Dina. Right? And that's why she called her Dina, because the gender of this child, who turned out to be a girl, the gender was because of a calculation done. Din ba'atzma, right? She made a calculation. She judged herself. She made a calculation, and she realized that I have to have a girl, because if I have a boy, my sister's going to be, she's not even going to be like the Shvachos. So that's why she called her Dina. We'll see some more interesting things about this story. I mean, it's a fascinating story in its own right. But we'll see some more interesting things as we go through the shir. So the Gemara is challenging our Mishnah, because the Mishnah says once a woman's pregnant, you can't daven for her gender. But here we see very clearly that Leah did that, right? Leah was pregnant already and she davened. She felt, you know, I might have a boy. She davened and the Gemara says that it changed. She had a boy and it changed to a girl. So the Gemara says, you can't bring a proof from Leah. Why? Ein mazkirin, mai sinisim. Right? That was a miracle. You can't bring a proof from a miracle. Meaning most of us, for you and me, you know, miracles are not going to happen. For Leah, one of the imahos, okay, Leah and Rachel, so that we understand that a miracle happened. But for us, you know, you and me, we're not going to experience these miracles, and that's why for us, we can't daven. It's too late for us to daven. That's one answer the Gemara gives. The Iba Yisema, another answer the Gemara gives, is that no. What happened when it came to Leah really could happen to us. Why? Maisa de Leah besoch arboim yom hava. Because the event with Leah, this incident with Leah, was within the first 40 days of conception. And the Gemara says within the first 40 days, there's still some flexibility. Again, I don't know scientifically, what this means or how to figure it out, but that's what Chazal tell us. Kedetanya, as the Braisa says, the first 3 days you should daven that the sperm fertilize the egg and it should last, it should make it. It shouldn't be like an ectopic pregnancy or something like that where the pregnancy doesn't last. It says zachar, but it could be a girl also. But from three days to 40 days, you could daven for the gender of the child. That's clear in the Braisa that you can daven at that point for the gender of the child. After that, it's too late. You have to daven that the baby should be born properly without any deformities or defects. From 3 months until 6 months, it shouldn't be a miscarriage or a stillbirth. Everything should go well. Okay, so that's the end of the Gemara. The Gemara goes on to discuss some other points here. But it's fascinating discussion here that it's clear in the Gemara that first of all, again, not from a scientific perspective necessarily, but certainly at least from Chazal's perspective, davening only helps within the first 40 days. After 40 days, there's no chance. That's called a past event. Then the gender is already determined, and there's nothing to talk about. Within the first 40 days, there might be some wiggle room. Okay, hold on to that Gemara. That seems to be how we assume. And when we do, the Svarim bring that a person in the early stages can daven for a particular gender. Once, you hit that 40 days, it's inappropriate to daven. Now it's a tefillah shav. What's done is done. What's said is said. And you can't. Nothing can change.
But scientifically, 40 days doesn't hold true because once the sperm hits the egg, that's it.
Right. Exactly. So we'll talk a little bit. I'll touch a little bit. About it. Maybe later, maybe to offer an approach, maybe that we can justify. But I hold on to it. Okay, So let's think for a few minutes about prenatal testing, and we'll see that these two topics really come together to determine what exactly can be done and what can't be done. Okay, if you see here, I just jotted down four examples. Now there are others. This is not an exhaustive list of prenatal testing, but these are just four common ones that are done. And like I said, there are others that are a little bit more complex that are done, you know, under different circumstances. AFP, which is the alpha fetoprotein screening, and this is a normal blood test. This can indicate an increased risk of certain birth defects, an increased risk of Down syndrome. This is not something that is very definitive, this test. It's done early on in the pregnancy, and all it measures are the levels of this protein, essentially. And it's something that can indicates raised levels of these proteins, of certain things, and therefore there's maybe some room for concern, maybe. It happens to be that very often with these kind of things, there are, you know, what you call false positives. Very often you have certain raised levels and it's nothing. A vast majority of the time it's nothing. Sometimes it is indicative of some sort of a birth defect or of Down syndrome. But very often you have these things. It's a very, very early test just to indicate, you know, some basic levels. Okay, that's the first test. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu from Eretz Yisrael holds that this is something that's mutter to do. And again, we have to talk about, you know, when it comes to the testing, we have to talk about what's mutter. And then we have to talk about also, you know, what's reasonable or what should be done. And one of the issues with this test, and again, not an issue to prohibit it, but one of the issues with this test is that because it's so non-definitive, and because essentially all it does is notify you that there might be some raised levels which might be an indicator, sometimes what happens with this test is that it just causes more concern and more worry than is necessary. Now again, obviously, you know, sometimes you want to be concerned, and sometimes you want to do further testing and things like that, but this is a very, very basic general test which does not tell you all that much. Okay, amniocentesis, which I'm sure many of you, or if not all of you, have heard of, which is where they stick a needle into the woman's womb, take a sample of the amniotic fluid, and once they have a sample of the amniotic fluid, this is a more advanced test, and here they can actually detect chromosomal defects and things like that. This is a questionable test from a halachic standpoint, and we'll talk about why. As we go through, we'll talk about why. However, it can be used a little bit later in pregnancy to verify lung maturity. Meaning that's something that's a little bit more important, and that's something that is certainly mutter. Right? Later in the pregnancy is something that is certainly mutter. And we'll talk, you know, we'll go through the issues and you'll see, you'll understand a little bit more, and we'll look back at the end. CVS... chorionic villus sampling, a sample of tissue that connects pregnancy sac to the uterus. This also is something that Rav Mordechai Eliyahu says is a little bit questionable. And then finally, the ultrasound, which is the normal sonogram ultrasound that we're used to. At 20 weeks, it's also called the survey of fetal anatomy, where they go through, you know, each of the organs of the baby to make sure that they're developing properly, that everything looks good. So that Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg holds is mutter. Okay, so now what are the issues here, right? Well, what are the issues that are involved? So just to make it very, very clear, if a doctor is concerned that there might be an issue that needs intervention, so sometimes you have the doctor, you know, either this very early blood test comes back with raised levels or whatever the case might be, or through the ultrasounds and through whatever other tests the doctor's doing. The doctor's concerned that there might be a health risk to the child, or to the mother, but certainly to the child, and an intervention might be necessary. So then there's no question that any of these tests are mutter. Right? There's no question about that. Any type of testing which will help the doctor to determine if the baby is healthy, and if any interventions are necessary, is certainly mutter. Sometimes they can tell through some of this testing, you know, that there are, Rachmana Litzlan, there are certain defects, whether it's heart defects or lung defects. And sometimes, as we know, right after delivery, a baby has to be whisked into the into the operating room, and they have to do immediate, you know, emergency surgery. And sometimes, because of the advancement of these tests, they have an idea beforehand of what's coming, and they can know, as opposed to in the past where they didn't have these tests and the baby's just born, and then you have to kind of figure out on the go that something's not right and what is it and how can we fix it. But here, where we have the tests in advance, and we can check things out, and we can see, oh, you know what? There's a mark. There's a red flag. There's an issue. You know, we see there's a problem, and we're going to have to either induce labor early or whatever the case might be. So that's unquestionably mutter. Right? Of course, you're allowed to do any of these things to save the life of the baby or for the health of the baby. So we're not talking about anything of that nature. That's pashut. That's simple. That's obvious that kind of thing is mutter. What's more questionable, and this is where some of the sources become very interesting, what's more questionable is when there's no basis for concern. No basis for concern. The doctor is not particularly concerned. There are no markers, no red flags, nothing that's indicating to the doctor that anything is wrong. So then the question is, how thorough of a battery of tests should one go through? Yeah.
When you say the doctor is concerned, I mean, I know women later in life, definitely have increased risk of fetal defects, Down syndrome.
Okay.
Is that a case where a doctor's concern would be enough to say, okay, you're allowed to do this?
So here's another, and you know, thank you for reminding me. Here's another interesting twist. And the interesting twist is, let's say that they find that this fetus has Down syndrome, right? So then what? Nothing, right? So I mean, some of these tests, obviously, if the test is going to find, you know, a real defect which is operable, you know, something that's a problem where there can be a medical intervention to help the child, to keep the child alive, to make the child's, you know, to make the child's quality of life better as soon as the child comes out. So that's unquestionable. That's obvious that it's mutter. But part of what makes some of these tests halachically questionable is that sometimes these tests tell you things that you can't do anything about. You know, Down syndrome is a perfect example. That's something that they test for nowadays. They test to see if there's Down syndrome. The only thing that you gain if you know that the child is a Down syndrome is that a person can prepare themselves mentally. You can prepare yourself mentally that you now are going to have a child with Down syndrome, and there are certain challenges that come with that as a parent. But that's it. There's nothing else to do. There's no intervention. You can't, you know, do anything to make the child, you know, not a Down syndrome child at this point. That's just the way it is. And with certain defects, the same thing would apply. Now again, if the doctor has for any reason a concern that there's a more serious problem where there can be an intervention or it is operable or something can happen where this quality of life can be improved or the baby can be saved or anything like that, so then of course it's mutter. That's not a question. But that's that's an important thing to keep in mind, and we'll see why that's so important. Okay. Rav Moshe has an interesting tshuva. And this is source number 3, and this is a tshuva in Choshen Mishpat, where he discusses some of these tests, but the bulk of the tshuva is discussing abortion. And the question was posed to Rav Moshe that if you do some of these tests and you find that there's going to be a child with major problems, right? We're not talking about a Down syndrome, right? You know, no halachicist would ever have a hava, you know, to abort a Down syndrome fetus, right? That's okay. So, you know, Baruch Hashem, it's a wonderful child, and you'll deal with the challenges that you have. But let's say you have a child who's really going to be sick. You know, a child, and Rachmana Litzlan, these children are born that for the first couple of years of their life, they're very, very sick, and it's extremely challenging for the family and resources, and you know, it's a very tough thing. And sometimes you have these kids who don't make it out of their second, you know, or third year of life. So then, under those circumstances, what do you do? And this was the shot that was posed to Rav Moshe, and it's a long, long tshuva from Rav Moshe, all about abortion. And essentially, the bottom line is, and again, this shir is not about abortion. I wanted to take a little bit of a more positive spin, but essentially, Rav Moshe says we don't, as Jews, right? We don't abort because there's going to be challenges. We don't abort because there are going to be physical difficulties, even, you know, ill health. That's not a reason for us as Jews to abort. We believe a fetus is a life, right? And we don't believe that you can just abort because of that. Rav Moshe says very clearly, the only time an abortion is warranted is where there's a threat to the life of the mother. If there's a threat to the life of the mother, that this fetus developing, you know, can cause a threat to the life of the mother, that's a different story. And there's a Gemara about that, there's a discussion about it in the poskim, and that's a different story. There is grounds for, obviously, for abortion to save the mother. Exactly. That's a whole different story. I mean, we could talk about that another time. But that's essentially the bottom line of Rav Moshe. We don't abort just because even if the child is going to be born, is going to have a poor quality of life for 2 to 3 years. And even if it's going to drain the family's resources and be challenging for the family, that's not a reason in our mind to abort. It's a life, right? The fetus is a life. A life is a life. And you do whatever you can to make that life have the highest quality of life possible and to make it comfortable. And if Kadosh Baruch Hu takes it back after 2 to 3 years, that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu decided. We don't abort, you know, because of something like that. So Rav Moshe is essentially talking about that type of shiloh. You know, and that's the bottom line that he comes out with. He makes an important point, and if you look at what he writes, is at the very end of the tshuva. He just sticks in a little bit of a hashkafic chizuk, and he writes bichlal tzarich leida shebedika deharofim shiadunu mibedikasam shehuvlad kazeh hu rak umdena vehashara be'alma. Now again, this tshuva was written some time ago, but essentially Rav Moshe is saying that it's an umdena. Sometimes these tests are not conclusive. Sometimes the tests just give you percentages. They give you a high, you know, there's a high risk, or it's likely, or, you know, different types of language like that without telling you, you know, 100% and unquestionably that this is the case. Shelohaya shayach lismocha al divrei bazen. And he says, it's, you know, a person shouldn't put all of your eggs in that basket. But he says it doesn't really matter anyway. But as I said, you can't abort anyway. Right? Even if it is a child that's going to have these difficulties, even if it is a child that's going to be sick, that's not a reason for abortion. And this is very important. Moshe says, you have to keep in mind, everything's min hashamayim. Right? Parents have to keep in mind, as they're bringing a child into this world, that everything is min hashamayim. And he says, if for some reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that you need to bring this type of child into the world, for whatever reason, and this is the child that this woman is carrying, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbon, and you're not going to be able to outsmart him. Right? If you think, well, I'm going to abort this fetus, so I'll avoid that, a difficult, challenging situation here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will work something out for you. Right, okay, so you know you're going to avoid this one. Hashem wants you to have a challenge, he wants you to go through something. And again, this is something that's already there. We're talking about a fetus that's already there. I'll come to your question. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Shelachein tzarich lekabel be'ava kol ma she'osah Hashem Yisbarach. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, you have to be mekabel be'ava. You have to accept it with love. This is what Hashem decided, that this is my pekel. This is my life's lot. This is my mission. This is what I'm going to do, and you do it. So he says, don't do the test, right? You can't abort anyway. Don't do the test. You have bitachon that whatever it is, and you don't know what it's going to be, but you, whatever the case is, you dive into the Ribono Shel Olam, and hopefully he'll grant you with a healthy child. And if something happens, and it's not exactly the child that you imagine, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you, and you have to deal with it. Yeah, Stephen.
if we hold like Rav Moshe, then yeah. Why wouldn't we say that any or all of these tests
okay.
would be for peace of mind or heads up, so to speak,
okay.
of the parents, and everyone should say they're all wonder because okay. we're going in knowing that we're not going to abort.
Okay. Okay, so I hear that argument, and we'll see why that we'll see a challenge to that argument. I hear that argument, but peace of mind, right? You know, it's one thing to in the delivery room to be told your child is Down syndrome, your child is not healthy, X, Y, or Z, and now you have to grapple with it. You know, as opposed to, okay, I have a couple of months to prepare myself that I know I'm bringing this type of child into the world. I can prepare myself mentally. I hear that argument. Well,
that's because a lot of agmas nefesh to the mother.
With the sudden news.
Yeah, sure.
100%, 100%. You know, lahavdil. You know, when I was in, sometimes these things, as much as you prepare and as much as you mentally prepare yourself, you know, a set of parents that doesn't have a Down syndrome child, as much as they can prepare and you can read up on it, ain't no domer shmila re'iyah. Until you have the child and you're raising the child, you're not gonna, you know, it's not gonna make a difference. I remember, this is a personal story, but when I was in Shana Aleph in Eretz Yisrael, so I was saying Kaddish for my mother, and unfortunately in this small yeshiva of 23 Bacharim, there was another guy saying Kaddish for his mother, unfortunately, right? 23 boys, two of them saying Kaddish for their mothers. So my mother passed away. She was sick for about 9 months, and she passed away from cancer. And this boy, unfortunately, lost his mother tragically in a freak car accident. Freak car accident. Like, you know, a truck was going the wrong way. Some crazy car accident. Boom, out of the blue. And I remember, you know, like having a conversation with him, you know, about our different situations. In my situation, I had plenty of time to prepare myself. And in his situation, he had no time to prepare himself. In the end of the day, you know, which is better, which is worse? You know, you can argue both sides. You know, in these types of things, and again, I don't mean to compare, chas v'shalom, you know, a patira, you know, to raising a child that's not healthy or a child with difficulties. But, you know, sometimes with challenging life situations, there's no clear-cut answer that one way is better than the other. Preparing is not, you know, is better than not preparing. Sometimes, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives you the koach to get through it. So whether you know in advance or you don't know, sometimes just, you know, it is what it is. But that's just, you know, from a psychological perspective, but we'll share from a hashkafic perspective a challenge to that as well. Okay. There's a very interesting Gemara in Horios, and this was quoted by Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, and we'll see some of his words later. Apparently I didn't give it a number, not because it's not worthy of a number, but I just neglected to number this source. But at the bottom of page 1, if you look, it's the Gemara in Horios and Daf Yud Beis. So the Gemara has a very interesting case, and again, these are things that we don't really do nowadays. But the Gemara says, "Hayman deboy lemeipak leorcha." You're going out, you're traveling, you're going on a journey. Uboy lemeida ichazar veasi lebeisa ilo. So nowadays, we all assume we're going to come back, you know, in one piece. We're going to come back healthy. In those days, traveling was a little bit more treacherous. You know, who knows what type of bandits or wild animals might attack you, and it wasn't so clear. So the person is traveling and wants a reassurance that he's going to come back in one piece. He's going to come back healthy. So the Gemara has this very strange type of thing that you should do. Nekum bevesa dechavra, you go to your friend's house. Ichazi bavoa de bavoa leida dehadar ve'asi levesa. It sounds like one of these spooky type of things. You go to your friend's house and you stand there and you look at your shadow. And if you see a shadow of a shadow, whatever that means exactly, so then you can be rest assured that you're going to come home in peace. Okay. Not the type of thing that we would necessarily do today, but that's what the Gemara says. But then the Gemara says, don't do this. Don't do it. Right? Even though it might tell you one way or the other, don't do it. Why? Velav milsahi. The Gemara says, don't rely on this. Why? Dil machal shadaite umisra mazle. Because maybe you're going to see something, you're going to get a little bit confused by what you saw, you're going to think that you didn't see the bavoa, the shadow of the shadow, and you're going to think to yourself, that's it, I'm a goner. I'm going out on this journey and I'm not coming back, honey. Right? That's what you're thinking. And what's going to happen? Umisra mazale. And that's going to cause your mazel to decrease. You're going to have less mazel. What does that mean? Rashi explains in source, what I numbered is source number 4 on the second side of the page. Says Rashi, Vafilu hachi, explaining the Gemara, lo le'avet hachi, don't do this, right? Don't go and do this test in your friend's house. Tidilma lo chazi bavoa de bavoa, because maybe you won't see the shadow of a shadow. Chol shadaite, and you're going to feel upset, you're going to be depressed. Umisra mazale velo hadar asi mishum de misra mazale. And what's going to happen? And then you're not going to have the mazel because you're depressed. And if you don't have the mazel, then maybe you're not going to come home because you don't have the mazel. Not because of this whole shadow business. Maybe you didn't know what you were looking at. And Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein quotes a Rabbeinu Bachaya. He didn't tell us where it was. So I couldn't look it up. But he quotes a Rabbeinu Bachaya that says that explains this idea. Not explaining this Gemara, but explains the idea that when a person is very depressed, it's hard for them to daven. When you're very tzubrachin, you're very depressed, it's hard for you to daven. It's hard to daven. Sometimes you feel down and out. You feel very depressed. And he suggests that perhaps that's what the Gemara means. That if you see this sign, and you see, oh, you know, I don't see the shadow, I'm not going to come home. You're going to get very depressed, you're not going to be able to daven. That's what's going to decrease your mazel. And maybe you won't come home in one piece, not because of the shadow business. Maybe you didn't even know what you were looking at. And maybe you didn't see it because you didn't know where to look. But maybe you're not going to come back in one piece because you're not going to be able to daven properly, and you're not going to have good mazel. So sometimes the Gemara is suggesting not knowing something, especially something that's not clear, and something that's not 100% you know, clear as to what it is and what it's not, sometimes you might be better off. Because sometimes with the level of depression that sets in, or the level of, you know, a person is disappointed or upset, they're not going to be able to daven properly, and you're not going to be able to do it. So this is so he advances this as an argument against doing the tests that, again, the tests that reveal things that we can't do anything about. And again, I want to make that clear. Any test where it's something that we can do an intervention, we can operate, we can do something, you know, an early induce early labor, save the child's life, improve quality of life, 100%. No shame, right? 100% you can do that. But a test that's going to reveal something where it's really just for peace of mind, that's the only thing. There's nothing I can do about it, right? It's just going to reveal whatever it is, and that's it is what it is at this point. So then he advances this as an argument that perhaps it's a good idea not to do that. Because if you do it and you're upset, you're not going to be able to daven as well. You're going to be a little bit dejected. You're going to be disappointed. You're not going to be able to daven as well. And sometimes not davening will decrease your mazel, and that will cause you more problems than you actually knew about to begin with. So that's one issue. Okay. Another issue that he suggests here is that you can't underestimate the koach ha-tefillah. You can't underestimate the power of prayer. And he quotes the Yerushalmi on this Gemara and Brachos. This Gemara, this Mishnah and Gemara and Brachos that we saw earlier about not davening when your wife is already expecting for the gender because it's already set. And the Gemara brings the whole story with Leah and Rachel and Dina. So there's a Yerushalmi there on that Gemara. And the Yerushalmi says in source number 5, Piska, Hatzoik Leshavar v'chulei, quoting this line in the Mishnah, that if you daven for something that already happened, the tefillah shav, it's meaningless. The Beis Yanai Omer b'yosheves al hamashver. So Beis Yanai, this opinion, says that you can daven until the woman is yosheves al hamashver. What's yosheves al hamashver? Until she's in labor. Right? Until she's in labor. She's sitting on the bed. She's in labor, ready to deliver. You can daven that far into the pregnancy. Himas nisa hakodem kein yatzli. Okay, so he says before that you can daven until your Shavas al-Mashbir, you can't daven anymore, but before that you can daven. Amar Yehuda ben Pazi, afa Yosheves al-Mashbir yachal lihishtanos. He says even when the woman is on the delivery table, still things can change. Still you can daven. Al shem the pasuk in Yirmiyah, hine kachomer biyad hayotzer. Right, we say this as part of the Pizmonim on the Yomim Noraim. Right? We are the raw material. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who forms us. So you could daven. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can change whatever he wants. He can change things. Rebbe b'shem de Beis Yanai, Ikor Ibor shel Dina Zacharaya, and then they bring a raya from Dina. Now again, our Gemara said you can't bring a raya from there because that was Maisa Nisim. Right? That was an ace. That was a miracle. We don't bring rayas from miracles. But here the Yerushalmi say, you bring a raya from a miracle. A miracle can happen there. A miracle can happen to you. Me'achar shenispal lo Rachel nasis nekim. Very interesting, by the way. The Yerushalmi seems to have a different version of the story. Exactly. We have, in our Gemara, it says that Leah was davening. Right? Here it says that Rachel was davening. Right? Rachel was davening, and that's why he changed to a nekeva. Hadohi va'achar yal dabas, va'tikra shemadina, me'achar shenispal lo Rachel nasis nekeva. So the Yerushalmi is not like our Gemara. Right? The Yerushalmi seems to say that you can daven, forget 40 days. You can daven all the way up until delivery. And there's a question, you know, when she's on the delivery table, she's not on the delivery table, but you can daven all the way up to there. All right, what about the nais? Daven for it, right? You can daven. Davening can affect nisim. Davening can change things. Now, we don't rely on nisim. We know the Chazal tell us, ein somchin al hanais. You can't rely on the nais, but you can daven. Generally, we don't love to daven for nisim because we believe that if a person davens for a nais, the nais could happen. And what happens is, Chazal tells us, it's menachem mizuchu Yosef, which means we have a certain amount of zechuyos of merits in our account, right? So Kadosh Baruch Hu sometimes has to withdraw from that account in order to do things for us. So if he does something minor, he withdraws a couple of dollars. But if he has to do a big nace, he's going to make a big withdrawal. He's going to make a big withdrawal from our merits to do this big nace. It's not something that we want so much. We want to keep that money invested for the future. So that's so that we generally try not to daven for nisim, but if you daven, you don't know it's an ace right now, which is also an interesting point. You don't know yet, and that's what he'll talk about in a minute. But you daven, nisim can happen. In fact, the Targum Yonasan here in source number 6 says a wild chiddush, which is not in the Gemara, it's not in the Yerushalmi or in the Bavli, but he writes actually in this story, both Rachel and Leah were both pregnant at the same time. They were both pregnant. Look at the Targum Yonasan. Look at source number 6. Ushmiya min kodem Hashem tzelusa de Leah. Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu heard the prayers of Leah. V'ischalfu ubraya b'me'ehon. Targum Yonason says what happened was, it's not that miraculously the fetus changed from male to female, but actually Rachel was pregnant with Dina, and Leah was pregnant with Yosef. Leah was pregnant with Yosef. And what happened when Leah davened, he also says Leah davened like our Gemara, what happened when Leah davened was that the fetuses flipped. Right? They actually
not
switched.
A fair trade.
Excuse me?
Not a fair trade.
Not a fair trade? Why not? Dina was a big tzaddikus. So in fact, I gave a shiur about Dina over this past summer. I gave shiurim about women in Tanakh. So I gave a shiur about Dina, and I discussed this. There are a lot of connections, actually, between Dina and Yosef. If you look throughout Chazal, there are a lot of interesting connections, and it seems to be based on this idea that they were actually connected in utero.
Didn't Yosef marry?
Yes, exactly. Right? That's another thing, yeah. So there's a lot of interesting connections. Anyway, so that's the Targum Yonason. So you talk about Nisim, right? Not just the fetus changing, but the fetus is actually, you know, switching places. I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but Kadosh Baruch Hu worked it out, but it's incredible, incredible Nisim. Now, so writes the Chashukei Chemed, which is written by Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. He's a big Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, one of Rav Eliyashiv's son-in-laws. So he writes, and he quotes, he quotes some of these sources, and he writes Velachein in source number 7. Im kvar nichnasa ha'isha leherayon al tachkor acharei ad ha'asidos. So you don't have to worry so much about what's going to happen. Don't start doing all this testing again just to find out. Again, any testing that could save the baby, help the baby health-wise, great. But a test just to find out what's going to be, stay away from it. Okay, why? And he quotes some of the sources that we mentioned. Don't underestimate tefillah. When you daven for a healthy baby, right? Even if there might be some sort of problem in utero, there might be some sort of problem with the fetus, but things can change. Things can change. You daven for a healthy baby, things can change. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can change things. Ulam, writes from Zilberstein, Kol ze beterem asta ha'ishes habedika. But things can only change before you do the test. Things can only change before you do the test. Avala achar shekvar no dava olam. But once the test was done, and you get the results, and now you see Down syndrome, you know, this defect, that defect, this problem, that problem, whatever the problems are, Ein Hashem Yisbarach Noeg L'Shano Sidrei Olam La'enei Kol. He said, that's not so pashut. That's not so simple. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do a nes, where nobody realizes what the nes is, that's not such a big deal for the Ribbono Shel Olam. He does that all the time. Right? We're always seeing nisim. Yeah, we don't see it. There are nisim nistarim all the time. But a nes nigla, once HaKadosh Baruch Hu does it, right? Once it's revealed, now once everybody knows the results of the test, that you have this and that and the other thing, and now for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come and switch nature and to change nature even through your tefillos, he's not going to want to do that so fast. That's already an ace nigla. An ace nigla we don't have so much in our time. Right? Nowadays, you see the gender of the child, you know what it's going to be. No one's expecting that there's going to be an ace nigla and you saw one thing at the 20-week sonogram and all of a sudden, hey, it's a girl. Right? You don't expect that because HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not do nisim gluyim nowadays. At least not easily, not readily. But an ace nister, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do. Quiet nisim that nobody knows about, because nobody knows what's going on inside right now. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do. And he writes in Mishum Kach, Nemar v'sfar makedoshim, Mishiyesh lo cholo beveso yelech lechacham, v'yivakesh alav rachamim. It's interesting, he says, he quotes the Sfar Makedoshim, I'm not sure which holy works these are, but he writes, if a person has someone that's ill in their house, go to a chacham and ask for rachamim, right? Ask the chacham to daven for you, right? People do this, they go get a bracha. A bracha is essentially a tefillah. Right, you're asking the Chacham to daven on your behalf. He says, even before you go to the doctor, you should go to the Chacham. Why? Because once you get the MRI, once you get the results of that MRI, it's going to be hard to change it. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to change nature so quickly. He's not going to change the Teva so quickly. Once the results are clear, the Oz Tzrichim, the Nes Gadol Yosef. You need a big Nes for that. Ve'en HaKadosh Baruch Hu Osa Nisim Levatel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do that so fast. Okay, so it's a very, very interesting perspective that he has, that he says, yeah, we believe Tfilos can affect changes. Tfilos can even affect miraculous changes in nature. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do it much more readily when it's quiet, when nobody knows about it. Right? That'll be more agreeable to do. Once it's out in the open, once the results are in, and everybody knows you have this problem and that problem, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to change that miraculously is not so simple. We do hear stories of things like that, Right? We've all heard stories of, you know, the test results all of a sudden, you know, went from, you know, positive to negative and everything changed miraculously. We hear stories like that. But it's few and far between. But we don't know how many miracles were done when people didn't know what the issues are. We don't know how many miracles HaKadosh Baruch Hu did quietly, just, you know, on the side, because of a person's tfilos, because of a person's merits, because of a person's zechuyos. We don't know that. He mentions another point that you also you have to do that. You should take into account some of the risks that are involved. And again, I'm not here to discuss the actual tests, but some of these tests do have risks, depending on when you do them and how they're done. And the doctors usually tell you, you know, what the risks are, and they recommend that you do them at a time and in a manner where the risks are lower. But sometimes there are certain risks to for miscarriage or for birth defects actually as a result of the tests. Okay, you have to take that into account. That's not the end all or be all, but it's something that you should think about. And then he makes the final point, which we mentioned in the last paragraph, Ubenosaf L'chol Zeh, B'derech Klal Ein To'elas B'Bedika. He says, generally speaking, many of these tests, there's nothing that you're going to accomplish by doing them, besides for the knowledge, besides for knowing what it is. Very often there are no interventions that you're going to be able to do to change the facts that are there. The doctors can't change the way that the fetus is developing. And like Rav Moshe said, we don't have permission to abort a fetus unless he's endangering the welfare of the child. And this again, this is how I started, but just to conclude with this as well. But if the doctors tell you that if we do this test, we might be able to help the child when the child is born, and they can be prepared to save the child's life once the child is born, then he writes, then forget about whether it's mutar aser, then it's likely that it's a mitzvah to check. He said, speak it over with a posek, but he said it's likely that there would be a mitzvah in that case to check because of interventions. Again, these are just some general klalim, some general ideas, but you see some of the ambivalence, some of the hesitancy of the poskim to do bidikos, to do the testing where it's not going to help you at all. Obviously, where it's going to help, then of course you do it, but if it's not going to help, then you see their hesitancy. Yeah.
How do they know?
How do they know what?
That's a problem. How do they know before?
Okay, so that's a good question. So it all depends on the types of testing. You know, certain things they can tell, I believe, and you have to ask a doctor about this, but I believe that these big problems that he concluded about, you know, with the big problems that you want to be prepared for and you want to be able to operate right away or whatever the case might be, a lot of those problems I think they can detect without the genetic testing and the amniocentesis and things like that. A lot of them they can detect first of all with the 20-week ultrasound, which Rav Scheinberg says is mutter, and many poskim hold that that's mutter. I'm not going to say that there are no poskim who say you shouldn't do that either, but that's, you know, it's pretty accepted that we do. The 20-week sonogram is something that's, you know, the fetal anatomy survey, that's something that we do. And generally, if there's a big defect, you know, with the lungs or the heart or something, you know, something that's big that they feel like they need to really intervene and operate right away, they'll be able to tell. They'll be able to tell by listening to the heartbeat, by doing the sonogram, by something like that. You know, I don't think that these kind of tests that we're talking about are things that will prevent that. And if the doctor says, listen, I have a hunch that something's up, and that's why I want to do this test to see that there might be a big problem, then I would say do it. You know, in that kind of case, then do it. But if there's no reason for nowadays, these are standard. If you go, you know, if you're not from, or, you know, even many from people, you know, these are standard tests. Everybody does them. You know, everybody does, you know, the amniocentesis, everybody's doing all these tests, you know, genetic testing and all these things. They're getting a whole printout of, like, someone I know got, you know, they get a whole printout of all the genetic testing that was done. You know, do you really need to know all that? It's, you know, and according to what he says at the end, you know, you might actually lose something by knowing some of this information. Okay, I will stop here for tonight, and the Rizal Hashem will continue next week.